Thank you for downloading the New Comedians bonus content. I'm the host, Alex Boardman, and throughout this series of bonus content, I'm going to be speaking to established comedians and trying to get some tips and tricks from them and learn what it was like when they were new. Okay, let's get on with the show. No comedians. What a day.
Hello and welcome to the New Comedians Podcast bonus content. This month we feature the absolutely fun. I'm not even going to bother doing that. It's producer Rich here, guys. As you know, I'm the one who has to record these intros because Alex cannot be bothered. I mean, he barely be bothered to listen to the podcast. I'm beginning to wonder if he actually knows that there's a, like, it actually goes out online, like whether he ever listens to it at all. This one's quite a long one. It's with him and Justin Morehouse. Boy, did I have to cut out some of the people they talked about because I think they may have gone a little close to the bone on a couple of things. But there's some great advice. Justin is a stalwart of the... is that even a word? Stalwart? One of those three. Of the Manchester comedy scene and the UK comedy scene. You know, he does everything, radio, TV. You mention it, that man has done it. And him and Alex, you know, have been friends for years. So it's an interesting chat. They may go off topic occasionally, but God, trying to keep Alex on topic is impossible unless he's talking about Cantona or trainers. I hope you enjoy this one. It's a good one. Catch you at the end. Bye.
So, another bonus New Comedians episode, this time with Justin Morehouse. Hello, Justin.
Hello, Alex. Do you want me to hold the microphone?
Yes, hold the iPhone microphone.
Yep.
First things first, how long have you been going? Can you remember what it was like when you started?
I have been a comedian for 17 years this year.
Wow. Full-time? 17?
I've been full-time? A full-time comedian for 16 years this year.
Wow. So you went full-time quickly.
Yeah, well, you know, because you was around.
You won something, didn't you?
Yeah. So in 1999, I was a travelling salesman. I hated my job, and I used to go to the Frog and Bucket nearly every week. I was a bit of a comedy geek. And I used to love... I tell you, I used to go and watch, right? I used to follow Tony Burgess.
Yeah.
I used to follow Frank Sidebottom.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Johnny Vegas.
Yeah.
I saw you down there and Dom Carroll. But you were kind of like, was good. You was not headlining the Frog, but you'd have been hosting the Frog and doing the open, the middle spot.
Yeah, 99, I was probably only a year in actually.
Big Pig. I used to love Big Pig.
Yeah, Big Pig.
I used to love Lucy Porter. And it was sort of at the end of, like, Dave Gorman being on the circuit.
So when you say the Frog, you don't mean the Little Frog, you mean the new Big
I went
Frog.
To the Little Frog a little bit.
Yeah.
And then as it changed over, that was my kind of, like,
That's your time.
And then I became, sounds really weird, like a Peter Kay fan.
Right.
So, and he was on at the Frog nearly every
yeah,
week.
At least a month.
Yeah, at least once a month. And then he would turn up all the time anyway, and you knew. So I would go to the Frog and Bucket, perhaps... 5 times a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
And were you getting him free?
No.
Wow, so you were paying?
Hey, I was a punter, yeah. And I used to go to the Buzz, and I used to go to the Odd Comedy Night at the Witchwood in Ashton and things like that. And there was a couple of other gigs, like Scruffy Murphy's, I went to once, twice.
So while you were doing this, did you know that, was there an inkling?
No idea.
That you wanted to do it?
No, and then one day I was driving down the road and I went, do you know what? I wonder how you become a comedian.
Yeah.
So I phoned the Frog and Bucket. I literally pulled the car up. I phoned the Frog and Bucket, but I said, how did you become a comedian? And I think it was a guy, who was the manager at the time there? Scott. Or Lee. No, Lee.
Lee? Martin?
No, before him.
Malcolm? Not no, Malcolm.
After Malcolm.
Selick.
After Selick. He used to live upstairs and had a baby and a wife.
I know you mean.
And they got a pub in Stoke.
He's from Derby. Yeah. Sam.
And I said, how did you become a comedian? And he said, you need to have balls of steel. That's what he said. So I said, what did you do? He said, well, we have this open mic night on a Monday. Like, it was the thingy. And
Yeah, the Raw Night, Red Raw it was called.
Yeah. Red Raw night, because, yeah, and Stand Up got one called Red Raw as well.
Yeah.
Like everything at the fucking No Thing, very similar to a lot of other clubs.
The intro was nicked from the Glee, wasn't it?
Curry and Quips on a Thursday night. So he said, right, I'll book you in. But because it was sort of like July time, there was Edinburgh previews on. So I had like two or three weeks grace before I was on the Monday. So he phoned me up, he said, book me in. So then I told everybody that was doing it. So loads of mates started to come in. So I got in my car and I drove out to Moorland, Buxton, and got a pad.
I thought you meant Moorland, there was like that. What places?
Yeah. I just started writing.
Right, okay.
Stuff. And I wrote
Why
this
did
set.
You drive away?
I couldn't do it in the house. Right. I felt a bit embarrassed about it.
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
I felt a bit like saying to my wife at the time and that I'm writing stand-up comedy. It was a bit...
Yeah.
Because you don't know how to do it.
No, you don't. So, and also, if you kind of working class to hear anything vaguely artistic just means ridicule and beating.
Yeah. So I wrote this stuff, turned up, did the first one, and Brendan Riley was comparing.
Right, yeah. And, Brendan used to do it all the time.
Yeah. And, it's no bragging now, but smashed it.
Right.
Like, I've got a theory that no comedian ever has an average first gig.
No.
They always have to smash it or they die. But I think they perceive they're the smash it or they die. I think a lot of them might have a middling one, but the memory is that you smash it or die.
That's a really good theory.
Yeah, and so it was great.
So you thought you smashed it?
Yeah, well, and I did smash it.
Do you know what? I bet Colin will still... He's got every take from every show.
So I walked off and Brendan goes, ladies and gentlemen, the star is born.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
It was like that. So I was well into it. So then I went to the Frog that weekend and Neil Fitzmaurice was on. Neil Anthony, as he was called then.
Yeah.
And I was badgering him for advice. I remember saying to him, I'm a comedian. And so I used to religiously go to the Frog every single Monday. And we used to get £5 then on a Monday for the open mic night.
I remember. And that was when, because I used to MC that as well. And that was when you'd get the people from North Manchester Hospital, bottom block, were advised to come to write poems and to also to like help them get over social anxieties.
And we and a few of those beans.
And there was
beans.
The homeless people used to come as well because you get a fiver.
So it's old. There's loads
like 13 acts on.
My alumni. Yeah. That kind of period was
Alan Wilde.
Yeah, but I mean, people that might know now is like, so me and Mick were there every week.
Okay.
Me and Mick Ferry were there every single week. We would get a fiver. And I was there for a couple of years, sort of like doing Monday nights.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I started.
And how long did you do there? 5 to 10? It wasn't strict, was it?
No, it wasn't strict. It was 5 to 10. Wayne Dauber used to come and do the
same.
Wayne
Dauber.
Same Wambars there, shit and all.
Yeah, Wayne Dauber. He had a great bit about if I don't get to that. Do you ever walk in on the street and think, if I don't get to that bus stop before the bus does, all my family will die?
Yeah.
And he used to go, oh, God, I do, I think that.
Yeah. He used to go, do you have Deer Hunters on? And you sit down and you're watching Deer Hunter and you've got your pint pot from your pub that you stolen sometime in the past. He used to say. And he goes, falls and go, fuck, he missed it again. And then Tony Skip was on.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's been mentioned every week, Tony Skip. Chef at the BBC.
Some of the best jokes ever. He go, used to go on, I was on the bus and the inspector comes on. He goes, tickets, please. He looks at my ticket. He goes, hey, this is 3 months out of date. Like I was going to eat it.
So 2000, he used to do that. All these Man United fans are getting on me, or getting on me wick. I've liked him since they won the treble.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
So that's it. And then, so what happened was, and then you make friends and you meet people. And I used to hang around with Mick a bit. And I used to hang around with Smug. Smug would then sort of kind of took me under his wing a little bit. He was a bit like a Fagin in those days. Especially if you had a company car.
I was thinking, that doesn't sound like Smug being real. What's the old cereal? Oh, there we go.
So he had a company car and he'd go, he'd say something like, I'm doing a spot tonight in there. I can get you on.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us a lift? tell you what, right? I'll get Sue to make you tea. So I would leave my house sort of like in Denton where I live. got a Mostyn.
God.
And I get there and Sue go, what? You've come from... All right. And she'd like, get me some food and then...
Drive him to Edinburgh.
Back to Coventry, remember? For an It's a Scream gig, which was the...
Oh, I remember those. Sean Almy ones.
Sean Almy's. And I get there and Sean would go, hey, are you all right? And I go, yeah, I'm Justin. I'm doing the open spots tonight. He'd go, we don't have open spots. And so I go, he's there, just doing us down 3 hours. Like, all right, I'll put you on, do five. So I used to do all the open spots.
God.
And I used to just do loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of open spots. And this was sort of like the winter of 1999. Sort of like, yeah, that sort of time. And, so I kind of like got good quite quick. Met Peter Kay and I was a little bit kind of, it's Peter Kay. And everyone knew he was sort of making this show, you know, everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everyone, he'd done the that Peter Kay thing.
Yeah, which was sick. It was like a Coogan's run, wasn't it?
Six different episodes.
He
and everyone
all
knew
the
he was doing the series.
Yeah.
And every comedian around here had asked him for a part.
Yeah.
And I asked him for an audition. And he went, you can have an audition because you're the only one who's asked for an audition, not for a part. And so we all had like open auditions. And I remember...
was it at that Bolton? I went to one as well, the Bolton Travelling or something like that.
No, mine was at Lyme on Princess Street.
I know that.
And you know what? I still notice. I remember the day I went for that audition, right? They were clearing the ground on the corner of Whitworth Street and Princess Street to build some new fancy things, which they still haven't built.
Right, wow.
It's been that's been wasteland for 15 years.
Wow.
And it's been bought a couple of times out of different recessions. So by this time I've given up work and I'm working in for the council doing housing repair things. And so I got the part and I walked in work and went, I'm not coming in again. And they went, why? And I went, because I've got a part in the TV show.
Wow.
And then did that for 6 weeks and then had no money after that. And then whilst we were filming the first series of Phoenix Nights, so this is like less than a year of being a comedian. No, just over a year after about the first year.
Because a lot of people, most with the exception of Neil Anthony, who was his really good friend at the time, and Spikey.
Yeah,
Dave
they
Spikey,
all wrote together.
Everybody else was quite new.
Yeah.
All the comedians in it, Archie Kelly.
Yeah, me, Toby, Steve Edge.
They were all new. You were all like been doing it less time
couple
than
of years,
him.
Yeah.
Not even that, I think a lot of.
So we were filming Phoenix Nights and there was a competition called the City Life Comedian of the Year.
Yes, Agraman
organised it.
Judged it.
And the final that year was at the Comedy Store for the first time.
Manchester,
it just opened. So picture the scene. I'm driving to the final of the competition. Wasn't really asked because I was in a TV show. This is how I was thinking.
So it's not been on telly yet, but you've recorded it.
Literally. No.
Oh, you know.
3 weeks in.
Right, okay.
I've spoken to the director and said, will I be able to have that night off? We did at the read-through. And he went, yeah, we'll probably be able to work around that for you. I'm driving down Hyde Road in my G-Reg Sierra gear. And the back window fell out. It's a grey one.
God.
The back window fell out. And it dropped out. So I ended up, I remember being stood on Whitworth Street, putting a black bin liner on the window with my little brother Martin. And I walked in and I was late and I couldn't give a shit because I was stressed about that. And I didn't even think about it. They went, we've done the draw. And I'm like, oh, fucking done the draw, have you? Where, what shit spot have I ended up with? Ah, first after the break.
Oh,
nice one. So I go on and I go on with a kind of relaxed attitude. And I, you know, again, I think you have to be honest about these things. Had the gig of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
Smashed the shit out of it. Won it. Went upstairs to the balcony. Phoned Smug at home. I remember this. I phoned him. And I told him, I said, I've won it. He said, how'd you get on? I said, I've won it. And he's going, Sue, he's won it. I remember that conversation forever. Forever.
Well, he'd have been gutty because he's got no lift now because your window's knackered. You're back
you know what?
Street.
He like strip everything away because Smug's our mate and he.
Yeah, I've known Smug for 20 years.
We've known him for a long time and we're joking about him asking for a lift. But that's the kind of guy he is. He's a wheeler dealer.
Yeah,
he's a sharp bloke. Do you know what I mean? He's a sharp bloke. And I remember how happy he was in that conversation.
Smug was really happy about it.
Yeah. You know, you can't bullshit forever. You know?
Yeah.
Because he's a bit of wheeler dealer and he was, you know, and he's, you know. And I just remember that. And I walked back in And I met Don and Charlotte. And Don said to me, he goes, "Who speaks for you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Who speaks for you?"
It's like a jouster.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones.
And I said, "I speak for myself. I don't know what I mean." And Charlotte went, "He means, have you got an agent?" And I said, "No, I haven't got an agent." And he said, "We'd be very interested." So this was like a year of being a stand-up.
Wow. That's like the dream few months.
Yeah.
That's a dream couple.
So I go in on the Saturday afterwards and I had a chat with him. The show's on, Best in Stand-Up. And I'm in the office having a chat with him about this. And he goes, "We can do this for you. We can do that for you. You know, we're not the biggest agency, but we care about stand-up and all about that." So I was like, amazing. So I'm still filming Phoenix Night. So I go and see Dave Spikey, who's a regular at the Comedy Store. He's the only one on that show.
Yeah,
he's a regular at the store and in London. Because, I mean, obviously, they only told me my set. And he went, "Oh, yeah, go with them. They're, you know, that's ideal."
Yeah, yeah, nothing better.
So I signed with them. And then, this is like confession time, the next four phone calls I got from the Comedy Store, I lied.
Uh-huh.
They kept saying, "Can you do Manchester this weekend?" And I kept saying, "No, I'm babysitting. I've got gigs in." Or I just wasn't ready.
Right. Oh, okay.
I just wasn't ready. It was too much. From winning that competition to being in Phoenix Nights to getting signed at the Comedy Store, I just wasn't ready.
So did you have a 20 even by the time?
No.
Wow.
No, I had a 10.
Because I can remember some of that first set you had about, there was the bit about McDonald's in, not Withington.
Chorlton. Holding pen.
Yeah, and there's KFC and Purgatory. KFC and Purgatory. Purgatory, that.
I used to use that, and I used the word temerity in my first
set. Yes, temerity.
Temerity. And people used to go, "That you're using it's like Purgatory and Temerity."
I can't remember anything else. I can just remember that.
I used to do jokes about, one of my favourite jokes of that time was, "What do you think about animal testing?" And people go, "Oh, look at that. It split the room, and it like a scalpel up or a laboratory bunny." And I go, "If you don't believe in animal testing, how about this?" And I pull a dog lead out of my pocket. And I say, if you've not tested that, there could be carnage. I could be walking my dog up the hard shoulder of the M60.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, I used to do quite a lot of jokes about being fat and that sort of stuff. And
I remember the McDonald's and KFC because I knew where they were.
Yeah. In Charlton, I used to say, you're in the middle of that, turning right there going, "McDonald's KFC," it was like Stevie Wonder.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just the purgatory that for a fat lad. That's what he said. Yeah. That was the phrase. And I was like, "Oh my God, we did that only a few." I thought it was near Scruffy Murphy's in Withington.
No, it's the one in Charlton.
Right. I know exactly what you mean.
Where the feathers used to be. What's the Tesco now?
Yeah, it's a Tesco.
So yeah, so then I just started doing the store quite a lot. And then, you know, and then I got divorced. And then, yeah, that's what happened. And then I started working on the radio. So have I answered your first question now?
No, the answer was it was at the Frog.
Yeah.
That's perfect. No, that's really good. How long have we done? We are
17 minutes in.
Blimey. Sorry. Right, so a slightly more abridged version. Yeah. Let's just ask one more question then. Because we've had other people on about it. So you're talking about when you started and stuff, and that's really good. Firstly, have you got any tips?
For people starting now?
New comedians, any tips?
People will say to you all the time, it's hard being a stand-up comedian. That's the thing you'll hear now for the rest of your life. And it isn't hard to be a stand-up comedian. It's hard to want to be a stand-up comedian. So let me tell you now, if you're a stand-up comedian and you're listening to this and you've done more than 5 gigs, you're a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And don't give up. Because if you give up, you're not a stand-up comedian. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
I always think the saddest phrase in the English language is "I used to be a clown."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How would you say "I used to be a stand-up comedian"?
No, you don't.
So it is hard, but also it's brilliant. And when you sat on that mega bus and you've not been paid for the gig and your bank card's been declined, you know, just remember that when you're lying in bed tomorrow and you roll over, your mates have been at work for 3 hours.
Well, exactly. What time is it now? People have been at work 3 hours. They've left the house 4 hours. Yeah, I've read 2 comics today and watched a sitcom.
I've been for breakfast with Paul and chatting to you about comedy. And I've got to do some writing this afternoon. But that's the tip. Always remember, you're a stand-up comedian. You've got the best job in the world and it's fun. You're doing this because you want to do it. And there are not many jobs where you can say you're doing that.
Do you tell people? Do you feel like a stand-up comedian now?
Yeah, that's what I am. Because I do lots of different things, but people go,
20 years in nearly, do you? Because I'm still a bit...
I still think I'm a cheat.
Oh, somebody's going to find out.
I think everybody does that. I think that's
sanity. Do you think doctors are like that and solicitors are like, oh, God.
No, because they're arrogant people. Doctors and solicitors...
don't like comics.
Yeah, well, right, here's the nub of it. Right, your missus is a teacher.
Yeah.
Doctors, police, they have a superiority complex. They think they're better than us, and they need that to
survive.
But we need to punch up. So when we're on stage, we have to start low status and get high status. Some of us do that immediately, like Sean Mio does that immediately.
Yeah, I love Sean Mio.
His first joke. Some of us, it takes us 20 minutes to get to that point, but that should be the point. We should be one of them when we walk on the stage, and a god.
And a god.
Yeah.
Right, here's one little follow-up to that then. Do you ever... I still don't tell half the people I know. I mean, casually know, like on this street, that I'm a comedian. Because that is a recipe for disaster. Because the next question is always, tell us a joke.
Yeah, well, this is going to sound wank. But obviously, I got a little bit of profile, so...
So you can't hide anymore.
But the worst thing is when I have to tell people. Kind of in public. I want you to be living... I'm a comedian. Do you not know this? I have a level of fame or recognition, which is really weird. Like, I struggle going to the Travel Centre.
Because you were on Match of the Day last
Premier
week.
Premier League show, yeah.
Premier League show,
so there's
sorry.
No sauce.
Yeah, turn that on, and I was like, oh, God, let's turn it. Wearing the same outfit as you got on today, I might add.
Was I?
Well, you had a scarf on.
I had a scarf on, yeah. Matt Watson said I look like a French poet. I go to Travel Centre, people will walk past me, and one will go, all right, mate? And the other one will go, who's that? So that's the level I'm at.
Right, okay.
Half the lads in the Travel Centre know who I am.
That's not a bad level then, really. That's
and then
still...
they'll get about 50 yards and one or two, you can see them going, and one or two around go, Tiger Face!
Right, yeah.
They're dead loud, you know.
Because the famous story about Peter Kay going to the Trafford Centre, he went in at one entrance where Debenhams is, which is the first shop. The next shop was a model shop.
Yeah.
And they'd been there 45 minutes and they'd not got past the model shop. And he just turned around and had to go home or something. That was, I think it's like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
Yeah. And I mean, even people that I know in Corrie can't go to the Travel Centre. I mean, most of the people who stop me are nice and they like Phoenix Nights generally.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Fighting Talk on Five Live. They love Fighting Talk. Yeah.
It's good. I like that bit.
But it's really weird that they like that. They're sort of like, oh, then you see a lot. But then there are some people.
Or Vimto. You're the voice of the Vimto'd.
Yeah. I'm Fred Bentos.
Are you?
Yeah. And Piers Morgan's Life Stories.
I didn't know that.
A while ago,
you did a food one, I remember. There's loads of times I've been watching stuff and gone, Justin, fuck off. Because it spoils a programme if you know somebody.
Yeah.
Like Vimto, when you're going, I'm the Vimto, I'm like that. No, you're not.
I've done that for a bit now. But what was it said about the... Oh, so the Travel Centre, so it's nice, you know what I mean? It's not, the worst is... People think that you work at the Comedy Store all the time. So, like, they think that you're there every weekend. And when you're not there, I get messages going, why are you not at the Comedy Store? Like,
yeah.
I'm there
yeah.
every week. This is what happens to me a lot. This is the only kind of, not downside of any kind of low-level fame. I don't know what the word fame, I keep using the word fame and I mean recognisability.
Yeah.
Middle-aged women, right, generally on a hen do, right? So the hen do are all cool and nice and having fun. Then one of the mums, sorry, am I supposed to know who you are?
Right, yeah,
no, you're not. I don't know who you are. Well, fine. You want to go, well, I don't fucking know who you are.
No,
either.
No.
But you can't. So there's that.
Drunk ladies are the worst.
Tell you the best. I told you, do you know this story about, so I'm driving through the night. It's one of them where it's a 50-50. Do I drive home or do I get a hotel?
Okay.
Probably like, you know, Portsmouth, you know, one of those.
Portsmouth's a hotel, that's 5 hours away.
Yeah, but if you're on, if you on tour, sometimes I can be finished for 9:30.
Right, okay,
so
yeah,
you
fair
go,
enough.
If I get home at 2:30.
And that's you don't all right. drink either, do you?
No.
That's the difference.
So, I'm in some services like on the M40, somewhere like that. It's a Starbucks. Mate, it's 1:00 in the morning. There's nobody there. So I go in. And the bloke who's working in W.H. Smith's, he's also working in Starbucks. It's that kind of pot noodle advert. So he walks in and I go, well, can I get a cappuccino? And he goes, yeah, he goes, name? And I go, mate. There's nobody here. So I think, and I'm looking at him and he goes, no, name. And I go, Dave. And he goes, Dave. And I go, yeah. And I go, already I'm regretting. Why have I said Dave? So he makes the coffee, writes Dave on the cup, makes the coffee, goes to the end of the counter where I'm stood and goes, Dave? So he hands the coffee to me and I go, cheers. He goes, there you go, Dave. And then as he gives me the coffee, he does the coolest thing I've ever seen. He goes, you look a lot like that comedian, Justin Morehouse. And I go, yeah. People have said that. He goes, I'm glad you're not him though, because he's a prick.
And what services was that in?
It was on, I think it might have been, it wasn't Beaconsfield, it was like a one with a nice, started as a Starbucks.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I just thought, oh, why didn't I say my name? I was trying to like, because I don't think, like once, when me and Jim, who I write with, and we got a producer couple.
Poison.
Yeah. We wrote two series on Radio 4 for sitcom, and then we converted it to a TV version, and we made a pilot of it. And it was sort of like 50-50 whether it would get made into a series. And I don't know if I was ready for it.
Right.
I don't know if I'd have been, I don't know if I'd be able to be famous.
Well, Jimmy Carr's amazing. You're really good friends with Jimmy, aren't you? He's amazing at being famous.
Yeah.
Manford's really good.
Jimmy's better than Manford.
Jimmy's the best I've seen of anyone.
Jimmy's the best at being famous. Jimmy was born to be famous.
He was. He's a miles better. Some people are better people when they're famous. John Bishop is miles nicer. So he's and so Jimmy's like,
do you remember what we used to call John when we was on the circuit?
No.
What? How do you get that?
Oh God, yeah, yeah. He said,
that's what John used to say all the time. He goes, all right, well, yeah. You go, do you get that? You go, and you used to think at the time, you used to think, oh, he's being jealous, but he's not.
No, he just,
he's learning.
Needed to learn.
How
the
did
process.
You? How did that happen for you?
I think I'd got a really good deal with O2 on me. And he was,
how did you get that?
15 quid a month.
How did you get that?
Yeah, God. We went to a funeral and I went back to his house about 8 years ago. And he went, what's your 5-year plan? And I was like, that, mate. It's like,
who, Jimmy or John?
John. So this was like on a Thursday. And I was like, dude, I don't know where I am on Saturday. I've not got a plan. I've never had a plan. I was like, what's yours? And he was like, and he reeled off and he'd only been going 6 months full time as a full time comedian. Yeah.
Well, that's a lovely thing though, isn't it? That kind of, that
says it's 5-year plan.
But not him saying I'm a full time comedian.
Yeah.
He'd been a comedian for about as long as we had.
Yeah, yeah, but then he went full time. He went full time.
But he'd been doing as many gigs as we had, but I'm
I'm working now. So,
this rags to riches. He went from riches to more riches. He went from riches to riches.
He did it all. He went like, this year I want to be doing every gig in the country. Next year I want to do a tour. Year three I want to be on telly. 18 months later he was on telly on his own Saturday night show. It's like, wow. That's driven.
A lot of that is quality. He's very good, but he's as good as we all are, I think. Mm. He's got a bit of stardust, you know, there's no doubt.
Yeah,
that.
He's very special, good looking, very telegenic.
Very good looking. He's very regional. He's competent. He's businesslike. He's smartly dressed. He's in good shape. All these things happen for a reason. And he also, either by look, design, or a combination, managed to hit about 5 or 6 things on the telly all at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant agent. That is a brilliant agent.
He did, you know, Live at the Apollo, then he was on this.
He did Celebrity Mastermind.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it with everybody in the house. And Emma went, is that, we've been to his house, haven't we? And I was like, that's John Bishop. And she's like, why is he on Celebrity Mastermind?
Yeah.
That was week one. Say that was on a Friday night. By the next Saturday, he'd been on something like Jonathan Ross. He'd been on Apollo, and then his own show started. So he was on 4 times within 1 week. And by the end of the Saturday, I was like, oh, I really like the John Bishop thing. He was on. He's brilliant, isn't he? It's like, you didn't even know he was. Yeah. Literally 1 week earlier. Brilliant agent, that. When you think of other people we know he's
Flashy
been on.
Flashy,
don't they? We've been on Apollo. I know people who've been on Apollo 4 years ago, and then they're on again this year, and you're like, and nothing in between. And you're like, and they're brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. Right, one more question.
Yeah.
Because there's another 40 minutes in the next set. Because we've not done this with anyone yet, you've given us a good tip and stuff. What's the difference? Because you do a lot of touring.
one-hour shows and stuff. And people that are not as new as the brand new comedians might be thinking of going doing the first or maybe second Edinburgh Festival. Maybe their own first full show.
Yeah.
So do you have a different approach to if you were writing a Club 20? Do you have any tips for doing that?
Try and do the show as many times as you can before you get to Edinburgh.
Right, how many times? Because I saw your show.
Try and do at least 30 previews.
30 previews?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it won't be ready otherwise. Because you can't rehearse it. Get somebody else to work on it with you, whether that's a director, a writer, or just another pair of eyes. Team up with somebody else. So if there's two of you doing shows similarly, be each other's buddy.
Right.
And go and see their show and, you know.
Take friends.
Invite people, often somebody like yourself or myself. Don't be afraid of saying to somebody, would you come and see me preview and tell me what you think?
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes somebody will give you a little tip and a little thing. Show I did 2 years ago, last show I did, was about having my hip replaced. I did a joke about wearing calipers as a kid. And it was kind of funny, it was a joke that. And then Andre Vincent came to see it and said, you should tell them... it used to work when they tried
to stick stuff in your head, like the Spastic Society, it was called.
Money in my head. And every time I do that joke now, it gets like a big reaction. I go, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and I hate that. Things I've written, where you do a 40-minute bit and one half joke that somebody else is in it. It's the joke that gets the biggest laugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're always in.
So don't be afraid of taking on other people's advice or asking for it. That's the most important thing. You're not alone. Everyone else has done it. Remember that Edinburgh's Clown Camp, and it's about being a better comedian. It's not about winning awards or getting recognised or anything else. It's about being in the same place for a month and getting better to be a comedian. You can also relax whilst you're in Edinburgh. You can meet people. Network's a dirty word, but you meet people. Mm. Be nice. Don't be a dick. You know, do all the extra gigs. Go to other people's shows. Try to avoid lying. Don't be a knobhead. Don't look over people's shoulder in courtyards.
Oh, I hate that. Story.
It's hard to do that.
I hate that.
But, you know, enjoy it because it's a privilege. And the one thing you'll remember when you leave Edinburgh is it's an actual privilege to wake up in the same bed every day for a month.
Yeah,
it might not be your bed,
but
you're in the same place for a month. So enjoy that.
Yeah.
Enjoy the downtime. I remember Jimmy, we talked about him before, Jimmy Carr saying to me that really good comics, he said to them, how's the run going? And you go, oh, Jimmy's going great. It's just a different show every night. No, it should be the same show every night. Make it the same show. If it's the different show every night, it means it wasn't ready. Make sure it's ready.
Right, yeah.
There's three preview dates normally, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday on the run. If your show's ready on the Wednesday, let the critics in.
Okay, so you get... That's a great tip, isn't
because
it?
Because you'll be fighting with everybody else.
Yes.
Not everybody will let them in Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. If you can make your show super ready so that they can come in on Wednesday, this is the business model of Chris Lander, who works for Phil McIntyre, who's James Acaster is his protege.
Right.
The way the success of James Acaster
has
been very good, but also having the show ready so it can be the first to be reviewed. First to be reviewed. If they review it and the show's shit, you can pull them out for the next day.
Yeah.
And those reviews will disappear. Because you don't stick bad reviews up.
No.
You know. No.
The good 2 days later. It's only comedians who know the bad ones.
And also, I don't know what the science of this is, but I would imagine, right, that there are a higher number of stars and good reviews given out at the beginning of the festival.
Yeah.
Because people are... Because as fresh as you are, as fresh as the reviewers are, as fresh as the audiences are.
Yeah, that's a really good
idea. So I do that.
Well,
so
that's a brilliant tip, yes.
Here's another tip for you. Get a uniform. Decide what you wear on stage.
What, for this festival or forever?
If you can do it forever, do it forever. That's what I'm going towards now.
I really want that as well. I've said that to Emma loads, but...
Dark jeans, black T-shirt, trainers.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's it. It's been for 20 years.
Yeah, that's it. That's what you should wear.
Yeah, yeah.
But a plain black T-shirt, dark jeans, good trainers, that's what I'm going to wear on stage now, forever. Corporates, I'll put a collar on the rest of it. No, because that's what I think it is. That's my second tip. The third tip is to be self-aware when you're writing your show. Be self-critical. What I do when I write.
So what do you mean? Yeah, what do you mean with that?
So what I do is, I've told you this before, is when I'm doing a preview, I record every single one on an iPhone.
Yeah.
I listen to it on the way back from the gig, and I listen to it on the way to the next gig, and then I delete it. You don't have to listen to it again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when you do the show next time, you'll remember those ad libs.
Yeah.
And those little bits. Same again, same again. And what I do is when I write a show, I always write headlines. So I have one word for the show. And then I move that around, and it just, that's the way I do it. I have one book for Edinburgh where I go, right, Sowerby Bridge, write everything down, what I'm going to do. So then I can look back and just go, I did it in that order at Sowerby Bridge.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah, those are all really great
exercise book. That's what I always have.
Yeah.
Record it. I think collaborate, you know, with people. Do writing sessions with people where, some people do this. I've never done it, but I think I'd like to do it more often is go, right, Alex, let's me and you write together tomorrow. An hour, what have you got? Let's work on that, and then we'll work on what I've got.
I used to do that when I started. Yeah. All comics used to do that.
Collaborate, yeah.
You'd sit there, and then 3 hours have passed because you've flown by. You've had about five brews. In those days, you might have had 10 cigs.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, I came up with that. I really want that. You've took that bit because it suits you better. You've swapped it with this bit. Like my
take
my
a packed lunch.
Set. Yeah,
take a packed lunch to previews. Pack yourself a lunch. For
really?
Previews. Yeah. Don't eat motorway food when you're a comedian if you can avoid it. Take a packed lunch.
Do you? Do you know what? That I'd agree with that until McDonald's hit services.
Yeah, well, I don't. I'm a vegetarian, so I don't go to any of those places. Well, packed lunch. Make yourself a cup of tea when you're setting up. Have a good car. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Try and get as good a car as you can. Learn to drive.
Driving is a massive fact. I can't believe it. It's still a 50-50 comedians who can and who can't drive. And if you're in the 50% that can, you open yourself up to last-minute doubles constantly.
Yeah, sometimes people don't drive is because they became a comedian when they were at university and then they didn't have enough money for driving lessons.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, and you might not make lots of money. You might, but what, you know, shrouds don't have pockets, do they? You know?
What?
Shrouds don't have pockets, do they?
No,
there are no pocket. You die.
No, exactly. What's the point? Who cares?
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. I've had a brilliant time. And I've had tons of money, and I've had zero money, and I'm currently in a zero money phase.
But if you can pay the bills,
doesn't matter. Yeah, exactly. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who cares? It's the best lifestyle. It is a privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was. Do you know what? That was a brilliant interview. Thank you for all those tips, mate. Justin.
It's all about me, really.
It was. I bet this is 45 minutes long.
But my thing is, I love stand-up comedy. I don't feel any more alive than when I'm on stage and people laughing. I love my family and I like my friends, but I live for stand-up comedy.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think I'm a better person because of stand-up comedy. I think if I had a miserable job, I'd be a miserable partner and a miserable dad.
Yeah.
Because I'm a selfish person. So I have to be happy to make other people happy.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm betting there's new comedians, because that sounds like what I was before I was a comedian, and you're annoying on a night out. You think you're great. And at a party, you think you're brilliant and you're the centre of attention, and you're actually really annoying. And if you do stand up, that stops for 99 out of 100 of
us. I mentioned that one before, self-awareness.
Yeah.
It gives you a level of self-awareness. It makes you feel awkward when somebody says, tell us a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you understand how important that is. You go, ooh, no, no.
Yeah, no, it's awful.
No.
I always say, it's come to haunt me, but loads of times at parties I say I'm a plumber or an electrician. Because nobody ever wants to talk about that.
Come to the spare room and just
that's
that
what
light.
Happens. Anyway.
No, I always say, I always say I'm a comedian. And they go, tell us a joke, and just say no.
Yeah, I say no.
Or if you're at somebody's house, tell us a joke, go, your house is shit. What? Just joking, mate.
Oh, Justin.
Thanks,
mate. Thank you so much. That was brilliant. Thank you. Do you want to stop it? Imagine if it's not recorded.
It's 40 minutes.
Oh, nice one. Are you doing an encore? No.
All right, there you go. Justin and Alex, I told you they waffle, you guys don't even want to know what I had to cut. Well, you do want to know what I had to cut out, because don't forget to rate and review on the podcast on iTunes. That's how you say those things. Rate and review us. Like, don't rate and review this bit, Like, just fucking at least 4 stars. We've done enough to earn 4 stars. At the very least. Because it really helps. And you've heard the podcast. We need help. Tell your friends. Tell people you don't like. Tell it on the mountain. Preach, brothers. Bye.
Thank you for downloading the New Comedians podcast. I've been Alex Boardman. You can follow me on Twitter at AOXBoardman. Big thanks to The Comedy Store for hosting us on the third Sunday of every month. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. The producer was Richard Massara.
Bye.
Bye.